This is a book on MP3, part 5 of Boiling Point, The Breakup of the United States and Its Citizens by Tom Merritt. Jeff, 3, Lakota Nation. Faye watched the sun through the car window. It seemed to spin above her. She'd mentioned it when we got on Highway 183 and had been mesmerized ever since. The sunlight bounced off her dazzlingly white sunglasses. She had on a 1940s movie star outfit. I always joked that she turned black and white when she wore it. She watched the sun rotate slowly. She tried to explain the illusion. It seemed to move like a cog or a medallion or some kind of hypnotic mandala. It was for these kinds of observations that I was elated to have her along. Crosland had finally caved in, but crustily delivered a warning. "You're uninsured, though, and anything that happens to you is your own fault." The Lakota Nation border had been extraordinarily easy to cross. The border agent didn't even have a gun. He checked our license and made some remark about Colorado being a pretty place and waved us on. The landscape didn't change. Even the highway sign for US 83 was the same, except for the black splotch over the US part. "What you looking at?" I used my redneck voice. "Still looking at the sun." "It stopped spinning all of a sudden." Her voice sounded dreamy and far away. "I think you're overheated." She began to squeal in excitement and protest. "No, I'm serious. It was like it was pulling us forward along the road by an invisible rope, and then that eagle flew across the sky, and it stopped doing it." "What eagle?" "Didn't you see that big eagle fly real low over the car? It totally blocked out the sun for a couple of seconds." Faye sounded less sure of herself. I was dumbfounded. "No, I missed that." "Maybe I was dreaming," she mumbled. She thrashed her arm around behind the seats. "You want a granola bar or an apple or something?" "Yeah, give me a granola bar." "What do you say?" She taunted me with the granola bar. "Give me a fucking granola bar, damn it." "That's better." She unwrapped it and handed it on to me. I spied a truck stop on the side of the road. "Let's stop and get some coffee." The truck stop had obviously been a Texaco station at one time, but now had no name at all. Its tacky gift shop dining area didn't appear very different than any in the U.S. The clientele eyed us warily, but inoffensively, the way locals and truckers always eye tourists. I stopped inside the door and slowly turned to look at Faye. "Money. Didn't Crossland say they still accepted U.S. currency?" "At some places, but I don't know about truck stops." "Why would truck stops be the one exception? You're worrying about nothing." She was right. I turned back around and decided to risk some coffee. Faye began goggling the horrible souvenir section, suppressing laughter at the usual display of gaudy souvenirs and trucker items. They still had spoons from nearby states, although there were none for North or South Dakota. The porcelain raccoons driving tractors that had become a craze in the last few years filled most of the top shelves. Bumper stickers of the normal trucker variety shared the shelf with fresh ones that said Lakota Nation and The People. I went to the register and set my coffee down. The checker smiled politely. "Will that be all?" "Yeah. $203. I pulled out $2 and 3 pennies and laid them on the counter. My license slipped out and landed face up with the big Colorado flag quite visible. The clerk quickly slammed his hand down over the license, but not before the nearest trucker caught a glimpse. The man wore a black T-shirt with an eagle riding a Harley Davidson emblazoned on the chest. He had a red baseball cap that said Pfizer covering thick black hair. The lips under his Willie Nelson mustache broke into a grin. He spoke in a redneck voice I had tried to imitate earlier. "You're not from around here, are you?" The clerk interrupted him. "Now hold on, Looney. He's got the right to be from wherever he's from. It don't mean nothing about him." "Don't wax legal at me, Frank." The rational part of my brain shut down. "Your name's Looney, huh?" The clerk's head sunk and began to shake. Looney sneered. "Yeah? What's yours, little pussycat?" "Strangely enough, no." Faye edged up and tried to move me away. "My name is Nunuff, your business." The man lunged forward and slapped my coffee across the room. There's no excuse for slapping a man's coffee. I saw red. "You shithead Americans think you can come back and ruin a good thing. We've got freedom here, man. You're not going to pervert this nation the way you..." "Yeah, but people like you will." Looney lunged for my neck but fell flat on his face as he tripped over Faye's well-placed foot. He scrambled to his feet, finding himself face to face with a large man in flannel who appeared from behind me. I felt extremely small between the two men, but the sight of my coffee on the floor kept me stiff. The skinny one is right, very brave to say so. Maybe he keeps idiots like you from ruining things. Get out of here, Looney, and don't set foot near the highway. I'm sure you understand. Looney slapped the table, grabbed his jacket, and stormed out. Gonna send him to Res Eagle? I couldn't tell who made the crack, but laughter broke out in spots all around the truck stop. The clerk got another cup of coffee and gave it to me gratis. What's your name, man? The tall Lakota in flannel said man like he meant male human being, not like, hey, man. Jeff Conroy? Well, Jeff Conroy from Colorado, USA, be careful in our land. We haven't yet deported all the stupid ones back to your country. We may never do it, since we have true equal rights. I'm Highway Security Marshal Craig Eagle. Thank you, sir. I had fresh coffee. I was ready to be calm again. No need to sir me. I have no connection with the medieval European past. Please don't get the wrong idea about what I just did. We stick up for life. If you threaten the nation, you'll receive much worse treatment than Looney got. Why was it so easy to get in the country? I blurted out. The break in tension had left me shaky. We don't believe in espionage and secrecy. Honesty is the best espionage. Our highway security motto is, the ones who watch. We all watch out for each other. Take care. He turned and walked out to the parking lot without having changed his expression once through the entire conversation. Just like a cop, I thought. But then realized this man didn't strike me as a cop at all. There was no swagger or throwing weight around. He did his job and left. Actually, that's the way good cops act. I'd just run into so few of them, I'd forgotten. We climbed back in the car and pulled onto the highway. The rest of the trip to Pierre was uneventful. We had no problems checking into our motel. Familiarly road-weary, we lay down and fell to talking about Colorado and the new mountain alliance. We both worried that the situation could explode into another area war. I thought Colorado should join with Montana for its own good. Faye saw this as escalating the conflict. I just don't think there's any reason for Colorado to worry unless the Aryans spread outside of Idaho. I shook my head. We're surrounded, though, and since the federal government isn't punishing Montana, I don't know why we don't just join to be on the safe side. We may need the leverage against Texas or even Utah. Why do we have to take a military stance on everything? There's no reason for any of those areas to bother with Colorado. We're not that valuable. I don't think that matters. I mean, you're not looking at the fact that this is a greedy land-grabbing game, especially for Texas. And Texas did have a small part of Colorado at one time. So the solution is to jump in with both feet, both fists firing? She jumped out of bed and began to pace. I know you think any military is bad military. No, that's not what I think. Don't put words in my mouth. I already told you I understand there needs to be defense, but why? Oh, shit. Look, I'm getting too riled up about this. I'm going to just go get some ice and cool off. Faye stormed out the door and down to the ice machine. When she tromped back, she found the screen door locked. I sat at the table inside, pretending to read a brochure. I couldn't help pulling all the stops. I felt good getting even for the infrequent times when she got irrationally angry. I'm a stinker. She yanked on the door a couple of times, but I didn't move a muscle. Jeff, this isn't funny. Open the goddamn door. Jeff! I continued to read, undisturbed. Jeff, goddammit! Your juvenile little display is not proving anything except I appeared at the door. It's very simple. You admit I'm right. I let you in. Faye glared at me. I stared back calmly with the hint of a smile on my face. I'd already won, and we both knew it. She fought for control, but her lips struggled out from under her, and she began to laugh. In between giggles, she screeched out a protest. Damn it, Jeff, let me in. I unlocked the door, and she stormed past me. If you think for 1 minute that I'm going to be in any way amenable to you, you're damn... Right, anyone else pulls that shit, and I never want to see them again. It doesn't work. I had absentmindedly tried to turn on the ancient television set. Well, then turn on the radio and start making up for what you did. I did. Another state leaves the fold out west. The Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints declared a Mormon nation in Utah today and negotiated a peace with California. A small part of southwestern Wyoming also declared itself part of this Mormon nation. Troubles escalated in the Northwest. The Montana Coalition saw its first military action today in central Idaho against the Aryan Nation. General Andreas Melchick of the Montana National Guard remarked on the situation. I tell you, those guys have a shitload of ammo and guns, but they're not trained worth a damn. I give them 6 months at the outset. On the Arkansas front, the Ozark People's Republic pushed the Texans back into the center of the city of Little Rock. Jack Wilson has more. With his usual backdrop of gunfire, reporter Jack Wilson bravely shouted his report. Thanks, Greg. I'm in North Little Rock near the McCain Mall, where Ozarkian troops have the Texans on the run. A regiment of Texan regulars is holed up in the mall, which the St. Louis area elite unit has surrounded. I'm with Lieutenant Commander Kelly Shaw. What led to this stage, Kelly? A tough, no-nonsense woman's voice began talking in an Arkansas accent. Well, after a lightning raid down McCain Boulevard by the Southern Illinois boys, we had a clear drive for the St. Louis boys to break off on each side and hound out the Texans, which is what we're finishing up here. After that, we unleashed the Missouri and Arkansas Ozark specials, which pushed the surprise Texans down over the river and into downtown, where they're holding the line for the moment. How hard is it going to be to cross the Arkansas River? Well, Caesar got across the Rubicon, and Washington made the Delaware, and I think the Ozarkians will soon be waving the Texans goodbye across the Texarkana line. That's big talk, you could hear Jack smile. And we can back it up. Lieutenant Kelly Shaw of the Ozark People's Army. Back to you, Greg. Ozark troops also appeared in Kansas City. Spokesperson said they are merely recruiting. Fearing the Texans, the Ozarkians, and the Lakota Nation, a collection of state governments in the center of the U.S., announced the formation of the Great Plains Alliance. The alliance will work, in their words, to preserve and defend the states abandoned by the United States military. Nebraska, Kansas, and the South Dakota government in Sioux City make up the coalition. Spokespersons described it as a temporary coalition with a central military command, but no central government. This is American Belief Radio News in New York. I'm Greg Whitney. Kolbrowski, 4, Texas Military Prison. The fluorescent lights in the holding room could hardly be called light. They didn't illuminate so much as cause everything to glow as if slightly spoiled. 4 Texas military policemen played cards under a banker's lamp, which shed just enough real light to see the betting. Another MP sat squinting at a magazine, which seemed to have lost its color. The only guard, presently acting as if on duty, walked over to the cheap desk set near the door and shut off the netcast. He turned and faced the row of county jail cells holding the prisoners of war, 50 men and women crammed into 15 cells. A loud MP stomped past the cells. Lights out, y'all! I slumped back on my cot and looked at John. We'd been through a lot together. So much did not need to be spoken, even now. Well, McGillicuddy, I guess you were right. We shouldn't have been in the same unit. Listen, Colby, he said gently. Garrig will get us out. Just sit tight. He held up a hand. I know what you're thinking, but cut it out. You heard the radio. The press, John. I don't. The details don't matter. We're well into Little Rock. Once we get there, negotiations can begin. I sighed. John didn't realize Garrig hadn't been trained in emergency unit recall. If he got back to HQ, it would be a miracle if he remembered enough details to give intelligence any kind of useful lead. I couldn't remember much myself after hitting the wall. We'd woken the back of some truck with several other Ozarkians and a few random looters. I looked at the linoleum that lined the floor and walls of the cell, still gleaming in the darkness somehow. I felt imprisoned in a country kitchen. I almost mentioned this to John, but then he always sort of liked the country kitchen stuff. Suddenly, the lights went back on. All right, Kolbrowski, McGill, this is your new commanding officer, Captain Ann Bartholomew. Welcome to the proud Texas Shock Fighters 55th. 2 MPs yanked us up out of bed and marched us down the hall. We approached a door, and Captain Bartholomew slapped blindfolds on us. The MPs pushed us out into the night air, up some steps and into soft, cushioned seats. I heard many other people muttering around us. Colby? Yeah. I grunted, confirming my presence. I felt his hand touch mine briefly. A voice like bricks flying through a window pierced through the darkness. Quiet for the captain! Captain Bartholomew's thinner but more confident voice rose with the pitch of an engine, at which I guessed to be a jet. You, ladies and gentlemen, are on Flight 136 to El Paso via San Antonio. You have been selected as fine fighting troops to serve in the Texas Shock Fighters 55th. You will obey orders or receive punishment. Bader? Yes? I'm afraid, Bader, that the response in this unit is yes, Captain, Lieutenant, Administer. I heard grunts and groans and several whacks. From now on, however, the unit will be punished as a whole for infractions of any sort. Punishment will be delivered in a timely manner by the fine lieutenants in this unit who outnumber you 2-1. As soon as we reach cruising altitude, we will unblindfold and uncuff you. Please relax for the flight to Dallas. I doubted the 2-1 ratio, especially since the lieutenants were all squeezed into the first-class cabin. When the blindfolds were released, I began to talk to John, wary of the lieutenant monitoring all conversations. We spoke in the TV code we developed in college. John agreed that the Flintstones couldn't beat the Jetsons. We arrived in Dallas and sat on the ground. What must have been several hours dragged by without relief. The lieutenants gave us hard bagels for lunch. Still speaking in TV code, John and I decided they probably lied about El Paso, and that when we got to wherever we were going, we would try what the Ozarkians call a dual escape. From there, we would try to head north. The lieutenants monitoring the conversation heard an argument over whether MASH, Cheers, or Friends had the best final episode of the 20th century. Steve, 8, Dallas, Texas. Helen and I drove north on Highway 35E. We had packed the things we couldn't leave behind, and the rest would just have to stay. We couldn't take much because we didn't want to look like we were going anywhere permanently. We headed through Dallas on our way to Denton to see Mulu. I hoped Mulu had a plan to get us to Oklahoma City, where we could sneak along Oklahoma 66 into Missouri. As we came off a bridge north of Dallas, flashing lights appeared in my rearview mirror. I pulled the car over. "Listen, Helen, don't worry. We're just headed to Denton to visit Mulu, that's all." The policeman approached the car and leaned down to the window. "Morning, sir," I gushed pleasantness to cover my nerves. "May I see your license, please?" "Of course, sir. What's the problem?" Policeman took the license and radioed the number into headquarters. "Sir, you aren't doing anything wrong, and you're free to travel about as you please, but we have had some escaped prisoners from the Arkansas terrorist groups operating in these parts. Do you mind if I ask where you're headed?" "Up to Denton, see a friend." The radio crackled with some unintelligible reports. "You're free to go, sir, but be careful in Denton. We've had some trouble there recently. Have a nice day." What did he mean by trouble? Helen meant it as a statement. "I don't know, but I'm sure the police are wholly innocent." "What do you mean?" Helen looked at me horrified. "I was being sarcastic," I snapped. "Oh, well, you don't have to get mad." "I'm sorry, the cops make me nervous, you know that." "I know." She reached over and touched my hand, looking at me tentatively. I didn't want to smile, but I did, and so did she. And suddenly everything was fine for Helen. It's like the whole thing never happened because I smiled. When we arrived at Mulu's house, no one was there. I found an envelope on the porch. It was written in Russian, which I translated for Helen. "Hello, Steve and Helen. I must fly to Big Bend. You should join me. There are 2 tickets in the envelope. See you there." The tickets were for flights to El Paso. "What do you think?" I waved the tickets. Helen looked puzzled. "Is he trying to tell us something?" "Yeah, I think so. And that policeman wasn't happy about us going north towards Oklahoma. We'd probably get turned back if we went. What's to lose? All we have now is Mulu. We have to follow him." There were very few security checks as we got on the plane to El Paso. No one was trying to leave Texas or enter Texas through El Paso. However, when we disembarked, there were several security checks, which puzzled me. Why the sudden interest after we'd already gotten here? Something new was definitely being brewed up by Governor Morgan. Every day the Texans surprised me. I couldn't wait to get back to a normal government and a stable existence. God damn the Texans. After marching down an aisle lined on one side with Texan military troops, we found Mulu in the main gateway area near a packed security station. Helen ran up and hugged him. I almost did, too. "We are really glad to see you." "Yeah," Helen looked the most enthusiastic I'd seen her in months. "I'm terribly glad y'all took my offer. There's a somewhat secret security sweep going on north of Denton. If you'd gotten pulled over, you might have been fine, Steve, but Helen would have been carted off to who knows where. Anyone without a Texas citizenship paper or license is mysteriously disappearing." "We have a car?" Helen looked surprised. "Yeah, and we're going to Big Bend, where a friend of mine and yours will see to it we have a great time." Mulu had a strange look in his eyes. He peered down at his watch and pressed a couple of buttons. It looked like he was checking the date or setting an alarm. I knew better. "Yeah, let's get going." At the rental office, Mulu presented an investigator's badge and a fake Texas passport diplomatic ID. This sped up the now lengthy paperwork in Texas for renting a car and allowed us to get an unrestricted car. Most cars had the new Texas Republic plates with the Lone Star hologram behind the number. The hologram allowed police to check background on the driver. Unrestricted cars had the old plain black and white plates that had no hologram and read Texas exempt. Before getting in the car, Mulu opened a small suitcase and pulled out something that looked like an air freshener. He grinned at me again in a slightly disconcerting manner. "I hate the smell of these rental cars. You never know who's been in them." He sprayed the interior of the car while staring at the can intently. He motioned for us to get in, and when we were out of sight of the rental office, he pulled something out of his watch and placed it under the visor of the car. Okay, now we can talk. That's a small scrambler I worked up in case anyone's eavesdropping on us. My watch scans for minute resonating waves put out by most of the pickup mics. That airport was heavily bugged. I doubt they've got a scope on this car, but you never know. If they do, now they'll get a slight buzz and radio noise with me going on for 3 hours about how great Big Bend is and how I love Texas. I looked at Mulu with my usual sense of wonder and admiration. What was in that spray can? Here, Mulu handed the can to me. Press the spray nozzle and look closely at the logo. As I did so, a faint holographic image formed over the logo. An incomprehensible set of symbols and numbers played out across the surface, rapidly switching back and forth. It scans a 10-foot area for bugs and other monitoring devices that may be implanted in the car. I was extremely surprised to find an official car without them. El Paso's more backwater than I thought. I put the can on the floorboard. Aren't you a little paranoid? He's just careful, Helen leaned forward into the front seat, grinning. You can't be too careful in this republic, Mulu nodded. He took Route 54 out of El Paso and into the Fort Bliss Military Reservation. He explained it was less conspicuous to drive an official car through the little-used reservation than past the checkpoint on I-10. Since secession, the reservation has been split between New Mexico and Texas anyway, so no one's really sure what's going on outside of El Paso. After taking a gravel side road that went harrowingly through the Oregon Mountains, Mulu stopped the car. He pulled a New Mexico veteran plate out of his suitcase and removed the Texas plates. A mile down the road, we came upon U.S. 70. We are now in the undisputed territory of the United States of America again, he said. All I could see was an empty road and dust. I asked Mulu why we didn't encounter a border check. I don't know, actually. They have a border check on the eastern and northern borders of New Mexico. They practically consider it part of Texas. Maybe that's why they don't patrol the southern border? Still, we can make it to Las Cruces and hide with the friends I told you would be in Big Bend. Do you really think that they were spying on us enough that you had to lie about Big Bend? I don't know. I don't think they're out following us with helicopters, but they might have tried if we'd spilled all the beans. Helen leaned forward. So we're going to stay with Simone and Sam? Mulu answered before I could. Yeah, I mailed them, and we surreptitiously worked out a plan. She caught on pretty quick that I was talking about coming there instead of meeting in Big Bend. Helen said nothing more about staying with Simone, but I knew it bothered her. I wanted to say something, but nothing seemed appropriate. There really was nothing between Simone and me anymore. I turned to Helen. It's cool if we stay with Sam and Simone? She laughed shortly. Where else are we going to go? Yeah, it's fine. I left it at that. I hoped it stayed there. 30 minutes later in Las Cruces, we pulled up to a small, low wooden house with a big yard. An elk hound bounded up to the fence behind and began to bark. Monique, quiet! A man dressed up in a white button-up shirt and black jeans bounded down the porch toward us. Mulu took the lead as usual. Hey, Sam, what's cooking? Just making some salmon. Come on in. He grabbed Helen's bag and led the way back into the house. The house was dark and cinnamony. Helen and I sat down on the couch while Mulu followed Sam into the pink kitchen. I knew the whole idea of seeing Simone again made Helen upset. I started to say something, and so did Helen. I'm sorry, Helen squeaked. Nothing. What were you going to say? Well, what's the plan now? Are all of us going west? I think so. Mulu wants it to seem like a friendly little vacation instead of a fugitive rush. Just then the door opened. Hi! Simone's eyes caught mine. Oh, hey, you guys made it. She set the groceries down and gave me a big hug. So how was your trip? She looked at Helen, then back at me. Fine. Hey, thanks for doing this. No problem. I'm there for you, man. She gave a little smile and hurried off into the kitchen. Sam came back out. Anyone for salmon? Sure, Helen yelled quickly and loudly. Sam graciously served, and we graciously ate. After several minutes of wolfing down food, Mulu began pontificating on the Texas situation. They're not going to open up another front. I think they may try to get New Mexico to join them, like western Louisiana and Oklahoma, but they're not going to invade. Nah, they're going to grab as much as they can. Wow, they can, I replied. They'll make an excuse in New Mexico, and they've already got one in Louisiana. They've got to expand their borders to keep them safe. As long as they know the iron's hot, they're going to strike it over and over again. They have to. Sam shook his head. I don't know, Yogi. I think that might be a bit stupid even for Texans. I mean, wars cost money, and all the states are broke. There's no way they could afford it. Mulu considered Sam's words. I don't know. Well, take this as secondhand hearsay, but a friend of mine mailed me part of a UN report which supposedly showed German euros being funneled into Texan banks and Italian euros being deposited in banks all over California. Simone stood up. I don't like conspiracy theories very much, but I've seen some pretty strange German tourists come through the bookstore, all on their way to El Paso. I'm going to go have a cigarette. I jumped up. Me too. Steve, Helen cried. Oh, come on. One isn't going to kill me. Besides, I've had a very stressful day. I'll be right back. Don't worry. Simone sat on the porch looking off down the street. She turned to me. I miss you like fuck. I touched her arm. Yeah, I miss you too. How are things? Okay, I murmured. She forgiven you yet? I don't know. Of course not, and she won't, idiot. Don't talk about her like that. I'm sorry, she just makes me so mad because she makes you unhappy. I'm not unhappy now, I'm just not happy. Yeah, and that's not right. I stared straight out into the sandy field of scrub. Maybe it's not, but now when everything is falling apart, I've got to hold on to what little of my life there is together. It's like Texas starting all those wars for self-preservation. Is that too pretentious? No, just overly dramatic. Your life isn't that bad. It could be, I don't know. You happy? I turned her honesty back on her. Oh yeah, Sammy's great. Everything I could want. I still get restless, though. Wondering, you know. You're in the same position as me, Simone. Always have been. When will we ever learn? We won't. We better get back inside before they start inventing new scandals about us. Mulu and Sam were arguing about whether import beers or impoverished war refugees were more important on incoming cargo ships. Sam valiantly defended the beer. And finally, even the finest brewed refugee is not drinkable, he finished. Helen sat punching buttons on a sofa moat. Your TV doesn't work. Simone looked neutrally at Helen. No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. Hasn't worked in months. They're hard to find parts for now. Do you want to listen to the Netcast? Her gaze briefly rested on Sam and then settled pleasantly on me. I answered without thinking. Sure. This is the Week in Review on American Belief Radio. We stand for unity. American Beliefs Radio Week in Review. I'm Jerry Martinez. Chicago and Detroit formed a new nation this week. They claimed a thin swath of land in northern Indiana and southern Michigan, placing armed guards along Interstates 90 and 94. African-American front gunmen required all passengers on the highway to pay an increased toll. George Halberstam has more. Commuters outside Chicago were annoyed by the delay getting on the east-west toll road outside Gary, but beyond that, many weren't too concerned about the change in government. A refined Chicago accent spoke over the noise of traffic. Well, I don't like the toll, but nobody does, so what are you going to do? George asked a question from off mic. Are you worried about the African-American front taking over Chicago and Detroit? I'm sure they'll do a hell of a lot better than the Democrats, but, you know, parties change, but everything always stays the same. Well, what about secession? I got to get to work. A new, more earthy Belmont voice began to speak. They what? God damn it. They better not have shut down Fairmont. Another younger voice took over. So are the Bears leaving town then? George Halberstam returned with his accent-free, studio-modulated voice. The Windy City seems to be riding this one out fairly obliviously, Jerry. Thanks, George. Talks have begun in St. Louis among Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Ohio about defending against the alliance in Chicago. The Ozarkians finally pushed the Texans out of Little Rock. ABR lost one of our best reporters in the battle. Jack Wilson's greatest dream was to cover a peace conference which would end the fighting. All of us here will miss Jack greatly. After freeing Little Rock, the Ozarkians began massing troops in Kansas City and along the borders of Memphis. Texas is manning the Colorado border. The president has advised Colorado to prepare its militia to join the U.S. Army against a Texan attack. Colorado Governor Wilson Gregory remarked, "What U.S. Army?" And the governors of Tennessee and Kentucky met to discuss their state's positions should the Midwestern states ally. The two states feel threatened by the Ozark People's Republic. Jack Wilson died? My mouth gaped. Yeah, I heard the report. Simone spoke in monotone, looking at the floor. He was in mid-sentence, and there was this big explosion, and then that lieutenant from the Ozarks picked up the mic and said Jack was hurt. Oh, my God, Helen's eyes widened, and she drew her hand to her mouth. The world is such an awful place. Why do we always have to hear about it? There are a lot more people than him dead. Mulu also stared at the ground. He's just the most apparent in our lives because he's so well known. We looked at one another silently. A wind picked up and whistled through the cracks of the house and out into the New Mexico desert. That's the end of Boiling Point, Part 5.